there's a guy here just in the nick of time. What does that make us?
Big damn heroes, sir.
Ain't we just?
You're probably wondering where you are. I'll tell you where you might be. You might be in the room that you die in.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Good evening, and welcome to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, a fiendish film and television radio show where foes and ghouls gather to shoot the breeze about frights and terrors on the small and silver screens. I'm the Machiavellian Marcus Acco, and my favorite zombie movie is Shaun of the Dead.
And I am the lachrymose Laura Sampson, and my favorite zombie movie is Night of the Living Dead.
And tonight, our special guest, returning for seconds, please tell us your name and your favorite zombie movie.
I'm Michael Anser, and I wasn't aware we were doing five voices.
But sorry, I had something stuck in my throat.
And my favorite zombie movie is a contentious one. It's the Thriller music video.
That's not a movie.
It is a movie.
It's not a movie or a television show.
It is. No, I knew you were going to contest this.
Okay.
So I did some research.
Yeah. You'd be the first one on this show to do that.
Well, there you go then. It's a good job I'm here. Right. Okay. So the question is, does it have any movie stars in it?
Okay.
Yes. It's got Vincent Price.
And
Michael Jackson. He was in Smooth Criminal and The Wiz. Okay. Next question. Next question.
Yeah.
Does it have an acclaimed movie director directing it? Yes.
Okay, John Landis. Yeah,
who
sure.
also wrote the screenplay along with MJ.
Mm-hmm.
And did it have a theatrical release? Yeah, it did indeed.
Yeah.
and again, this is a bit I looked up. To qualify for an Academy Award as a short, the film was shown in a theatrical screening along with a 1940 Disney animated feature Fantasia in December 1983.
You know what? Now that you
it was indeed. I mean, obviously, it didn't get an Oscar nomination, but they had a theatrical release. And as the point to clinch it, in 2009, it was inducted into the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress. The first music video to ever receive this honor for being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant.
That was actually one of the reasons why I was actually going to say, it's taking it back. You know,
arguing, is there?
No, there isn't.
Nah,
can't argue with the research.
As soon as you mentioned Thriller, I was thinking, I have to contest that. But then the voice in my head was saying, no, that's actually, it's a short movie.
It's a short movie.
It is a short movie.
It's like 10 minutes long, isn't it?
And it basically set, it set in motion music videos being done as in short movie version, mostly by Michael Jackson. He did that one. He did the one for Moonwalker. Which was the album was basically a movie. And then with Joe Pesci.
Yeah,
and then in the 90s, he did the other one for... what movie was it? Ghost? That was it. The Ghost one.
The Thriller ripoff. It's all right because he was ripping off his own work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I forgot to add
he was paying homage to his own work.
Who does that? Well, I suppose if you're MJ, you can. But the thing I forgot to mention is that it was the first MTV music video premiere.
Yes, I remember that. Okay, fine. We'll accept your choice of Thriller being your favorite zombie movie.
And it's kind of also because I can't remember seeing any other zombie movie. I'm sure I have, but they just didn't stick in my memory.
Laura, you said Night of the Living Dead, right?
I did.
Yeah, I like Night of the Living Dead. Let's get you to tell us why you like Night of the Living Dead and see if it's the same thing as what I have.
I like Night of the Living Dead because it happens with no zombies until right at the end.
Uh-huh.
I like it because it was quite cheap, but it still looked really amazing. I like it because there is a really spooky child in it. I like it because somehow, quietly, for the 70s, there's black main actor.
Yep.
And
it's just so... Which will come to why I like that film, but
it's just so suspenseful. I came to this movie thinking that I did not like zombie movies. I went to a sort of a Halloween party and there it was on screen, and I expected that I'd just be, you know, drinking or doing something else. But I got completely hooked, and by the end of it, I felt really both scared and quite moved. So those are really the ingredients of a great film for me.
I'll be completely honest. Night of the Living Dead is one of the best zombie movies out there. It pretty much was one of the first ones, really. It started the whole zombie craze. Oh. It was George Romero that did Night of the Living Dead, right?
Yeah.
And he's known for being very political with his movies. Mm. And the one political statement he made with that movie, you mentioned it about the one black guy being in the film, was the fact that he was that black guy. Have you seen Night of the Living Dead?
No, I haven't. I want to see it after this.
Okay. I don't know if I should say this.
Well, don't ruin it for me, because I won't watch it then.
Okay, fine. It's a thing that happens with the black guy in the movie.
And oh, okay.
It's
I've heard about it,
right? Yeah, okay, yeah. Fair enough.
But people listening might not have heard about it.
Okay, so. here's a question. How long do you have to last
spoilers
before you spoil
it? Infinite.
Really?
Yes.
So you're telling me, okay.
Yes.
So I can't spoil a movie
that was made in the 70s.
I was going to go about far back as the 30s, but
seriously,
fine. Well, no. I like Night of the Living Dead because of what happened at the end. Good. But that's just me. And Shaun of the Dead, I mean, come on, Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, Nick.
No, I haven't seen it.
Get out of the studio. What are you talking about?
What, watch it now and then?
Yes, go watch. You know what? I'll wait. I'll sit here. I'll wait.
Just
you
dead,
go watch.
Dead silence.
It would be dead air. That's fine. I'll just play my ringtone and you go watch the movie, come back, and then we'll talk about Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead. Okay, I won't spoil anything for you. Shaun of the Dead.
Does it have zombies in it?
It does have zombies in it. Shaun of the Dead basically came out after 28 Hot Days Fuzz. Later. No, it was the first one in the Cornetto trilogy. It came after 28 Days Later, which a lot of people say...
I have seen that, actually.
You have
yeah,
seen
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people
still pick Thriller, though.
People, people still argue that 28 Days Later is not a zombie flick because it had fast-moving zombies and the whole idea of... Yeah.
Oh,
so,
yeah, that's nonsense.
So there was that. And then... So 28 Days Later kind of kicked off the idea of fast-moving zombies.
Right.
Dawn of the Dead was remade by Zack Snyder after that with fast-moving zombies. So it seemed like they were moving towards zombies being, you know, moving fast.
Okay.
Then Shaun of the Dead came out and they went right back to slow moving zombies, but with the brilliant twist. It's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's a comedy horror, right? Comedy. And there's this one scene in it. I'm not going to describe what it is, but it basically whatever you want to poke fun at slow moving zombies, they poke fun of it. They use it to such comedic brilliance that is one of my favorite movies. It is in my top 10 movies of all time. That's why I put it as my favorite zombie movie.
So what is the difference between fast-moving zombies and slow? Is it just a level of fitness before they became zombies?
No. It depends on if you were to compare all of them. It's the nature at which they're infected. So...
Right.
With a lot of the slow-moving zombies, there is usually a virus. I mean, they call it a virus or whatever. With 28 Days Later, and this isn't a spoiler.
Oh,
this happens
God,
at the
I
very
love
beginning.
That movie.
Yeah, it happens right at the very beginning of the movie.
It's still a spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen it.
Well, it's rage-infected monkeys. That's basically what it is. It's not a spoiler. I've ruined that twist. It's not a twist. It literally happens.
Well, maybe people don't know that plot point yet.
Before the opening credits, it happens. So
unless
is
it in the trailer?
It's yes.
Is if it's in the trailer, I'll let you have it.
I will
if it's
say
not in the trailer, you've ruined it.
I will say yes.
You've ruined the movie.
Even
for everybody.
Though I am 99% sure it probably isn't, I will say yes.
Right.
So
it's one of the things that rage as an infection.
Yes.
In that movie.
Yes. So because of that, it's sort of in those zombies are fast moving. They're really hyper energetic.
Well, if we're talking fast moving zombies, then I can remember certain films. So World War Z I've seen.
Yes.
The 28 Days, 28 Weeks film.
Yep.
Yeah, films I've seen. Can't remember any others, but I'm sure I've seen them.
Yeah, those ones sort of then, it's because of 28 Days Later that yeah. they started introducing fast-moving zombies in films.
Right.
Because of the whole idea that...
It doesn't add anything.
But no, in a sense, it does. It takes away that whole... issue. There's a Bill Cosby joke about mummies, you know, like who's scared of a mummy, you know, like the yeah. old monster movies, the mummy, because the mummy's walking very slowly, like, yeah. Coming towards you. That's the same sort of thing with the zombies, right? Mm. It's like, how can a zombie really catch you?
Didn't Muhammad Ali make that joke?
No, he made a similar type
about
of joke.
Mummies.
But, yeah, okay, about yeah, mummies, yeah.
yeah.
And so that's why 28 Days Later, they revamped it and said, you know, and all the other zombie movies that came after it, like Dawn of the Dead, for example.
I was an extra in the 28 Days or 28 Weeks movie. I've just remembered that.
Thanks for just dropping that into.
No, I mean, I wasn't a zombie. I was running away from zombies, but it's just a really random memory from one of my former lives.
Anyway, so the reason why is because of that. So they get to remove that whole issue of, you could run away from slow-walking zombies. They made the zombies faster.
Well, didn't they? They sort of crossed them with vampires. You know the I Am Legend film?
That's yes. actually I saw that too.
Vampires.
Yes.
But... they behave like fast-moving
they're
zombies.
Vampires.
They're
more
outside the house. They're vampires. Kind of...
they're more vampires than zombies.
Is that something that's
but
in the trailer,
it's
like
the
Laura.
Living Dead sort of situation.
Laura, is that information in the trailer?
Yes.
It's just... it,
you know what? I will defend you there. It is in the trailer because in the trailer begins with him in a desolated New York City.
Yeah.
And then you see the bit where something rolls into the darkness and you see some things chase out of the darkness and he has to dive out of the window yeah. and you see them start to die as they're falling through sun. So yes, Laura... Right.
Can spoilers exist for something that already existed as a book?
Yes, well, it depends because if you've read the book, I guess.
Yeah, some people can't read. So
no, look, we're not going down that road.
No, but some people can't read.
Yeah, but and
what's wrong with that? I'm just saying some people can't read.
Okay. Yeah, you opened that kind of worms.
Yes, I did. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko
and Laura Sampson,
our special guest today on this Halloween. Even I forgot to say this is actually it's Halloween evening. I should be trick or treating. Our special guest on Halloween special is the return of the mellow voice maestro. Michael Amaria.
Hello.
All right. So coming up on the show, we will go through our box office top five. The UK box office top five. We'll go through our film and TV discussion, and it's a good one this week. And we'll end the show with our Netflix and Amazon recommendation. But first, let us have some TV and film news. All right, so there's no escaping the news of Harvey Weinstein and what he did for years, decades.
Allegedly.
What he allegedly did for years and decades with a lot of women who are coming out of the woodwork. I can't remember who first came out. But
Rose
I know,
McGowan, I think.
Was she the first one to come out? I know she
possibly.
Was. She's kind of been touted as the figurehead, the face of the revolt against Harvey Weinstein, and that snowballed. And there, I had last count about 200 women that coming up.
200
something, unless I'm mistaking that. And now, you know what? Don't quote me on that. But that has snowballed to the fact that it's become a humongous revelation, and it's toppled the Weinstein Company and so on. And also, the last couple of days, there's been more revelations about other people. Yeah. There was James Toback that came out with allegations. There was a Grey's Anatomy actress who basically wrote an article when she was a teenager. This was about 14 years ago or something, where she had said he had sexually harassed her. And she actually quit the industry because of him. The article in Rolling Stone said that because when she went to talk to other people about it, she got told she shouldn't talk about it, otherwise she'll get blackballed. And that disillusioned her with the industry, so she dropped out. But because of people like Shonda Rhimes, creator of Grey's Anatomy, who, as she described it in her article, were the more positive side of the industry, they welcomed her back and sort of nurtured her, and that's why she's back in the industry. So James Toback, Julianne Moore's talked about him, so number five actors.
Angelina Jolie.
Yep.
Who else? There's been loads of them.
Yeah, they've started coming out. And then most recently, Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, Kevin Spacey, last few days.
Yeah, so with the Kevin Spacey issue, that is also compounded with the fact that in his first statement about that, he then talked about being gay.
And coming out,
and
yeah.
he came out being gay.
Actually, let me just qualify the point I made earlier.
Sure.
When I said allegedly, actually both Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey have publicly apologized for their behavior. So in relation to Weinstein, I guess the alleged rapes. But
so you
in terms of the behavior, the revolving around sexual harassment, both Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein have essentially admitted to it by apologizing.
That's true to a certain extent. I would still use the word allegedly.
Okay.
Mainly because we won't go there. mainly from my very limited legal knowledge from having watched Law and Order constantly. It's best to keep yourself safe by saying that because the last thing you want to have happen is add fuel to the fire, and then you become part of the story. But that's not the point.
There's no adding more fuel to either of these fires.
Yeah, being completely honest, I don't think anything we say on this show is going to cause is going to either diffuse or inflame the fire even worse.
I think both situations are essentially tire fires. They're going to burn for a long time.
Yeah, the one thing I wanted to talk about, we had this conversation before we came on, was how does this now affect the work? So, you look at an example with Harvey Weinstein. And all of what has now come out about his behavior, which had supposedly been a known secret in the industry.
Exactly the same with Kevin Spacey.
Yeah. So people in the industry supposedly knew this kind of behavior was going on. And it wasn't, whether it was nurtured or it was protected or it just didn't come out. And now it's coming out. But then there's also the other side. So the work itself. So how going forward can that be dealt with? Harvey Weinstein. I'll give you an example with Harvey Weinstein. He was a champion of British cinema, of British films, making it in America. A lot of movies that made it big in America. One most recent, The King's Speech. The King's Speech. He championed it because of his efforts. That's pretty much why King's Speech went into America and swept up at the Oscars. Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey has done a lot of work for actors, directors. I'll be completely honest and open. A lot of work that has been done by these people. How do you then separate that from the allegations that are coming out from the cases? Do you then say, I'm going to burn every single movie that I have or throw every single DVD I have of Kevin Spacey in the trash because of these allegations? Same thing with Weinstein. I'm not going to associate myself anymore with any of the things that the work that he has been involved in. What happens there? How do you deal with that?
It's a really interesting question. I have no answer.
Okay.
I mean, I understand it. I mean, how do you separate the person from their behavior outside? How do you separate the person's work from their behavior away from their professional lives? I don't know.
It's something that has bothered me when I hear all of these, because you hear things about people that you respect, because you're kept at a distance that you don't actually get to see these things, and then these allegations come out, and I will still say allegedly, because at the end of the day, until it's been proven in court of law that this is the case, you can't really turn around and say yes, it's happened. So it's all alleged, and these are based on articles and people's statements and so on. So all we can do is just, as outsiders, just basically watch this and make our own comments.
But I guess the question then is probably, should their work be separated from their behavior away from their professional lives?
Me personally, I separate the two.
Yeah, you think the work should be separated from...
For me, I do.
Okay, why is that?
Because the work is... That's what causes that conflict to me, because I don't think I'm entirely right thinking that.
Right. Okay.
Because the work itself depending on we'll use Kevin Spacey for example.
So an example. Film Seven. Should we not watch Seven?
Exactly.
Because Kevin Spacey's been accused.
There you go. Or L.A. Confidential or American Beauty. All these movies that, before any of these allegations came out, people have classified them as being their favorite movie of all time. Now, does that mean that you should separate it? Me personally, I wouldn't. I would say I still appreciate the movie. It'll burn inside when that comes across. When I watch it and I see him, I'll remember that. But I'll still hold those movies dear. But there's a part of me that feels maybe that's not the right way to do. Maybe that's not the right feeling to have. So I don't know. It was just a thought I had, and I just wanted to bring that into conversation. I know I've sort of like killed the mood or whatever. but yeah, that's just my point.
Kind of scary for Halloween.
Yeah, well, I know, right? You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko
and Laura Sampson.
Our guest today is Michael Amaria. We're here talking films, movies. Let's talk about Laura. You are planning on going to the Korean Film Festival?
Well, yes. London has been so rich in the past couple of months with film festivals films from everywhere around the world. We've just finished the BFI London Film Festival, and also last week the London East Asian Film Festival. There were all kinds of movies, classic movies, new movies from all parts of East Asia. But this particular festival, which started a few days ago and goes on until the 19th of November, is specifically a South Korean film festival, which is run by the Korean Cultural Commission. And it's really exciting. It's full of names that I feel I ought to have heard of.
Yeah.
And so I'm really grateful that they're bringing over a festival that seems to be really brilliantly curated by academics and experts in the UK and also people within the film industry in Korea.
So are you going?
I am.
Okay.
In fact, tomorrow I will be going to one of the films in their Classics Revisited strand. It's all about the work of a filmmaker called Bae Chang-ho, who was huge in the 1980s. Sort of, if you're a Korean in their sort of 40s, 50s, if you've never heard of any other filmmaker, you would have heard of this guy. He made loads of films, and the film tomorrow, which is the start of a retrospective series, is called People in the Slum, and it's a melodrama about poor people in Seoul and a woman trying to raise her son and kind of trying to keep one step ahead of her slightly dodgy husband.
Okay.
It's going to be introduced by Mark Morris, and also the director will be there for a Q&A.
Okay.
Another really good thing about this festival is that lots of the directors who are really hugely high profile in Korean cinema have agreed to come over, sort of helped by the Korean Cultural Commission.
Is there listed Chan-wook Park on that list? He's my favorite Korean director. He did Old Boy. He did Lady Vengeance. He did Thirst, which on our first show, that was one of my number four, number five of my favorite movies from East Asia. Chan-wook Park. He's very subtle, very colorful with what he does. If he's there, I will definitely try and get myself to go to and ask loads of questions about Thirst in particular, because I love that movie so much.
Ask him about the octopus in Old Boy.
Sadly, he's...
Who's spoiling movies now?
I just said ask him about the octopus. Uh-huh. There's an octopus in the movie.
Yeah, but now when I'm watching the movie and I see an octopus, I've already seen the movie, but I'm just saying now I know what the movie is. Someone else that hasn't seen the movie is watching it. An octopus happens and they're like,
I said there is an octopus. Mm-hmm. And he's been asked the question many times before.
Fair enough. So is he going to be at the festival?
No, but there is a whole strand of the festival which is really geared towards fans of his.
Oh, fair enough.
And it's a noir film strand, which is taking noir films from the beginning of Korean cinema right up to now. And included in that is the first film by the director Lee Chang-dong.
Okay.
Who lots of people think is one of the greatest filmmakers ever, and who's just about to do a really rare film adaptation of a Murakami short story. It's really difficult to get the rights to Murakami's work.
You know what?
So, I mean, he must have said something good there.
Here's what I'm going to ask you to do. When you go to the festival, I'd like to get three recommendations from you so that I can go, because I need to expand my my Korean movie knowledge. So please, three recommendations when you go to that.
Absolutely. I'm really excited about it. And the site, the website of the festival makes it really easy. They've separated things into particular strands, okay, which is really helpful. And by venue as well.
Yeah.
There's a couple of really great venues that specialize in East Asian cinema,
okay,
that they've sort of taken over for the week. And if you want to find out more, you should go on their website, which is koreanfilm.co.uk, or follow their very active Facebook feed at the LKFF, or on Twitter at Korean Film Fest. And all of the news about all of the films that are coming, there are at least three or four showing a day from now until the end of the festival.
Excellent. We're going to retweet that their link so that the listeners and followers on our Twitter page and our Facebook page can get that information if they need to as well. Our Twitter is STB_ResonanceFM. Our Facebook page is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. This is Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko
and Laura Sampson,
and our guest is Michael Amaria. Michael, Hello. Did you want to say something?
Yeah. Can I just do a super, super quick plug?
Sure.
Last weekend, I went to the Tate Britain and to see the Ray Harryhausen exhibition.
Oh, nice.
It was fantastic. I've just remembered that. Okay. So, you know, if no one's familiar with the name, it's the gent who made the creatures in classic films like Clash of the Titans, yep, and Jason and the Argonauts, uh-huh, and stuff.
Brilliant man.
So it's just an exhibition of some of the models of the creatures and the artwork that inspired him. And it's a fantastic... Yeah, it's a fantastic exhibition. So if you're in the London area, head on down to the Tate Britain, and the exhibition ends on the 19th of November. So you've got until then.
Perfect.
The same day as the Korean Film Festival in London.
Dilemma. Yeah. What's going to happen? Which one are you going to... No, you have to go before then, obviously. Yeah. All right. So as it's Halloween, because it's quite spooky, we've introduced a new musical interlude. We're going to play a song from 30 Rock, the TV show. It's called Werewolf Bar Mitzvah.
Oh, man, Trey, look up at the sky. It's a full moon on the Sabbath.
This is scary.
Break it down.
I was working late on my Haftorah when I heard a knock on my bedroom door. I opened it up, and to my surprise, there was a werewolf standing there with glowing gold eyes. He says, tomorrow, my son, you will be a man. But tonight's the time to join the wolfing clan. Tomorrow you will stand at the Bema and pray. Tonight, let's gaze at the moon and bathe. Werewolf for mitzvah, spooky, scary. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves. Werewolf for mitzvah, spooky, scary. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves.
All right, that was great, Trey. Okay, it's over. That's a wrap.
Oh. The next day, what happened? The Toma didn't teach.
Oh, this
I got up in front of everyone to give my little speech. Then my teeth turned into fangs and my nails into claws. And I nearly dropped the Torah when my hands turned into paws. I growled and I roared and my rabbi did as well. It was a rocking werewolf zoo at Temple Beth Emanuel.
Hey, man, where'd you learn all these Jewish words?
My manager, Harvey Lemmings. Werewolf bar mitzvah, spooky, scary. Boys becoming men, men becoming wolves.
I just don't think the idea of the song can sustain itself for that long. It seems a little sweaty now, so.
This whole premise is sweaty. We had a reception at the Larchmont Country Club. They served a real nice brisket and an 8-foot party sub. I danced with my cousins. I got money from my folks. We had a lot of fun making circumcision jokes. Then I remembered the premise of my song. I was at a nice reception, but the werewolf part was gone. So we pulled ourselves together and we're wolfmen again. Just in time for monster fight to begin.
No.
All the country club employees were a brain-sucking pack who had all turned into zombies and were on the attack.
No.
So we fought them and some Draculas and Frankensteins too. Cause you gotta love bar mitzvah even if you're not an
R. There's no such thing as Frankensteins.
Steins.
There's no plural
wolves
to Frankenstein.
Men becoming wolves. Werewolf bar mitzvah. Hairy boys becoming men, men becoming wolves.
So that was Werewolf Bar Mitzvah. Now, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this song up was because, I mean, 30 Rock is one of my favorite TV shows of all time, created by Tina Fey, starring Tracy Morgan, Alec Baldwin, Tina Fey, and one of the writers on the show, in fact, one of the writers of this particular song is playing, Donald Glover. Thank you, Donald Glover. Every episode I get the opportunity to, I champion Donald Glover's work because I think that guy's amazing. I mean, he's had six or seven different careers that he's retired from. He's not retired from six. Yeah. He has six or seven careers. He's retired from like two.
Yeah, music and
the rapping
so
music
many
and
track.
Stand-up comedy.
Stand-up comedy, music, rapping, straight acting.
Yeah.
Emmy Award-winning straight acting.
Writing, directing, and show creation, and it's like...
I mean, strangely enough, I did name-check Werewolf Bar Mitzvah the first time I was here.
So. Yes, you did.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, you did. In fact, we had this same conversation about Donald Glover when last time you were here. Mm-hmm. It must be something about you being on the show.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It was also the week of the Primetime Emmys.
It was, yes. And he was going for Atlanta.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
He was nominated in three different categories, I think.
Yeah. He picked two, I think, which was great. I mean, hey. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze with Marcus E. Acko
and Laura Sampson on Resonance 104.4 FM.
With our special guest, Michael Amaria.
I feel very special today.
Do you feel very special? Is it because it's Halloween?
Something about the moon and Halloween.
You think?
Is the moon out today? Well, yeah. Anyway.
Would you classify yourself a vampire or a werewolf?
Zombie.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I go werewolf.
Actually, can I be a mummy?
Why?
Well, look, they could be quite nice people if you got to know them.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Well, okay, don't be mummiest.
I will be mummiest. Coming up next is going to be our UK box office top five. So, number five. Something has dropped from number one, number two, and just went straight to number five, which is Blade Runner 2049. Now, I've seen it. Laura, have you seen it? Michael, have you seen it yet?
Fine movie it was.
I've not seen it yet. I did want to watch it today before the show, but it's like 3 hours long. Yeah. There was no way I'd make it in time.
It's a good film. Definitely go and see it. It's very beautifully made. Mm. Denise... I'm gonna massacre his name. So just go see it. It's really.
I mean, I'm
exactly
definitely produced. Gonna see. I mean, I read the book that the original is based on. Android's Dream of Electric Sheep.
Yeah,
I'll be honest. It was for me a bit anticlimactic. I thought the movie was a bit anticlimactic again. I know it's considered a masterpiece, but for me, you know, it didn't really float my boat. But I am going to give Blade Runner 2049 a watch.
You should. It's a beautiful movie. Ryan Gosling is very good in it.
He's a very handsome man.
He is a very handsome man. Yeah, so I definitely recommend it. I mean, I have heard a number of people complain that it was too long. Mm. My feeling on that subject is it's not too long. It's just that a lot of people tune out because it doesn't do a lot in the time that it has that will keep on trying to grab your attention.
Right.
It's not a movie that desperately seeks your attention. It's basically saying, look, I'm beautiful, I'm here, either enjoy me or there's the door.
How does it compare to the original?
I think it's more beautifully made than the original. I think my personal opinion, in the original, the villains are stronger than in this one.
Okay.
But that's just my own personal opinion.
It's not really about the villains, though, really, is it? Mm. It's in the second one, it's about what counts as a villain or what counts as a human.
There are
all kinds of questions sort of bubbling up and down. And I really thought that Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford's performances were incredibly nuanced for what I was I was expecting to go and see, sort of a science fiction action movie.
Okay.
But it was a lot more, it was a lot richer and more character driven than that. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing it again.
Sold it to me, Laura.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I think you definitely enjoy on repeat viewing because you'll pick up on a lot of things. Just like the first one, you'll pick up on a lot of things that you didn't pick up the first time.
I've seen the first one twice. It still feels the same. But this one sounds a lot better, so I'm definitely going to check it out.
Well, number four is Death of Stalin. This is Amando Iannucci. It's got Steve Buscemi in it. It's got Jason Isaacs. Hello to Jason Isaacs. It's got Jeffrey Tambor in it as well. Rupert Friend. It's Amando Iannucci. If you like Thick of It, you'll love this movie. If you like Veep, you'll love this movie. And that it's fast paced. It's wacky. It's set in Russia. It's basically following the events after Stalin dies,
right?
And the power struggle that occurs in the immediate, well, actually in the aftermath of him going into a coma and so on and so forth. And all the actors have their own natural accents, although Jason Isaacs puts on a different accent. It's not like they're not trying to be Russian.
Right.
Steve Buscemi goes on full Jersey accent.
Nice.
And it's like, yeah, so it's good. I liked it. I saw one snooty remark, review about it. That snooty review was a 3-star review.
Okay.
So the last time I checked, it was 96 fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's
and
really
96.
Good.
Yeah, 96%. Wow. So that's
fresh.
Good.
That's exactly. Very fresh.
Number three is Lego Ninjago movie. This movie I've seen. If you like the Lego movie, if you like Batman Begins, not Batman Begins, the Lego Batman movie, then you may like this movie. I loved the other two movies.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this movie. I'd put it as the third in my favorite list.
What was lacking about it compared to the others?
The jokes weren't as clever as the Lego movie.
It was a writing.
I think for me personally, one of the reasons why I had high expectations. The people there were, you had Michael Peña, you had Dave Franco, you had Kumail Nanjiani. The voice talent behind it was exceptional. Jackie Chan's in it as well, and I'll see anything Jackie Chan's done. My expectations were a lot higher than what was given to me.
Okay.
When Kumail Nanjiani would start talking, I'd expect him to have a lot more witty dialogue coming in. Obviously, it's not his fault. He's a stand-up comedian, and he's funny for himself. The Big Sick is an amazing movie. He wrote, directed the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a great movie.
So semi-autobiographical or something.
Yeah. He's constrained by the script. Although, I think Justin Theroux, who plays Garmadon in it, is fantastic. I have kids, so we watch the Lego Ninjago movie. So if you're a Lego Ninjago fanatic, it's not for you. I mean, yeah, they reference the characters, but it's only just to get the jokes in there.
I actually hung out with your kids, you as well, over the weekend.
Yep.
And one of them told me that you've still not let him watch Spider-Man Homecoming. I think that's technically child abuse, so you really need to sort that out, Marcus.
Look, anyway.
I just wanted to say my piece.
That's when he does his homework, then I'll get him to go watch the movie. And that was number three. Number two, Jigsaw. Oh. So this is the latest installment in the Saw franchise.
And what do they call it?
Torture porn.
Torture porn.
Yeah.
Yes, there are a lot of sharp objects falling from very great heights around... just by the side of, sometimes through the heads or limbs of various characters in the movie. And that's the movie.
Yeah, I mean,
it's come out at exactly the right time, hasn't it?
Yes, that is the case. I mean, it's Halloween, so that this type of movie is going to come out. And it will dominate at the box office because torture porn has become it's become what people associate horror with being.
Is that really a genre now?
Torture porn, it is.
Yeah, of course, like human centipede and stuff.
Yeah, and it kind of, the term itself kind of got coined after Eli Roth's Hostel. Was it Cabin Fever? Or he did Cabin Fever first? No, actually, Cabin Fever was his first movie. Hostel was his next one, which basically was that. It's basically you're watching people just get massacred in the most gruesome, torturous ways.
Does it count as torture porn if it's torturing the audience? Because I watched The Room on the weekend. That was really painful.
No. The Room is a different type of torture. Okay. I like The Room for different reasons, we will talk about that in another episode. But
The Room.
Not Room.
As in, Tommy Wiseau. The Room.
Yes, The Room. Yeah. Tommy Wiseau. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Laura, I have a question. I've never seen a Saw movie. Should I watch this one? And can I watch it without having seen the rest?
Yes.
Yes and yes.
Okay.
Especially if you pay less than £10.
Fair enough.
Okay.
I quite like the genre if I'm in the mood for just something kind of silly and bloody that really, it's so over the top that it's not really even scary anymore. So fun.
So if weird, you want to switch it, off
I feel
your
a bit
brain
bad
and
saying,
go and watch something
saying fun.
Yeah.
You find people being murdered in horrific ways fun?
Well, only if it's so over the top that it's not really real.
Okay.
And that was.
I hope it's not really real.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a snuff movie, exactly. That was Jigsaw at number two. And number one, Thor Ragnarok 3D. Now, this one, I haven't seen it yet, but I am going to see this one. Literally, if I could walk out of the studio to go and watch that movie, I'll go and watch it. I'm a huge Marvelite. I love them. I've seen all the Marvel movies that are racked up. I want to see this one. Chris Hemsworth is doing an amazing thing. He's doing amazing things as Thor. So definitely want to go see this one.
Do you know, I saw this last Wednesday, but actually its release date was Friday, and the more sort of very, very new films I see, the more I realise how much people cheat on these weekend figures.
Okay.
Because there were two showings at my local cinema, which is in Zone 3 in London, on Wednesday. There was a full programme. There were about 7 or 8 screenings on Thursday. And then, obviously, it starts to be the weekend. Friday is part of the weekend purposes of
that's
the top 10, isn't it?
That's a well-known industry trick. Basically, you for weekend figures, the weekend technically starts on the Wednesday. And then they start showing from Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and they rack up all those figures, and then they put it for Thor Ragnarok, they don't have to cheat with those kind of figures.
Yeah. It's something like 12 million in the first weekend.
Yeah, of course.
And I thought this was, apart from really enjoying the film, I'm really familiar with the whole myth cycle of the Old Norse gods, also the comic, and it all came together and it was colourful, it was loud, it was everything that I'd hoped for.
Yep.
There were lots of in-jokes to do with the other films, and there's some quite moving bits as well, as far as the Thor films go. But I was really interested by how it's come out in territories other than the US before the US.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I did not know that.
And is that because of the director not being American?
Not necessarily. Is
that like a normal strategy for?
It's not a normal strategy because the normal strategy would be to go to America first, release it there because you get most publicity coming out there.
Where did it come out before America?
Definitely UK and Korea, Australia, South America, I think, and all over Europe.
Yeah, it's not really
everywhere.
Like I said, it's not a normal strategy. It is one that Marvel tend to use. I have started using recently. They did with Captain America: Civil War, I believe. Not Civil War. Civil War is the one with Iron Man.
Yeah. Winter Soldier.
No, I'm thinking Civil War. Civil War, actually. Captain America Civil War. They released it in the UK first before they released it in America. I understand the strategy. The strategy is basically to, because America, once you release it in America, it's big. With the exception of Asia, China, where you can have a movie that will open up and just blow your box office away. That's a strategy where basically some, like, for example, I think it's The Mummy, one of the Tom Cruise movies, bombed in America but went to China and just raked it.
Yeah. And Geostorm, the same, isn't it? It's coming up for 40 million in China.
Yes.
But everyone in the US and all the reviewers who I read one of the reviews last week on the show, and it was not kind.
Well, yeah, fair enough. Hey, so with Thor being released everywhere else except America, it's just a tactic that's being employed. Not a lot of distribution companies do that. It's a relatively new tactic. Looking at it from my own point of view, why that would be the case would be because you want to gather as much as you can from other regions first. And that would boost popularity, boost name recognition across the globe, and keep the American audiences hungry, waiting for the movie. So the moment it comes, because they've heard everyone else has got it, and I was like, why don't we have it? Why don't we have it? It's sort of like the whole thing about you don't want something until you're told that someone else is having it before you do. It gets the people who don't know about it that much to want to go and get it.
The most interesting of these, I mean, this is a week for lots of different strategies to be employed. I guess it's created a really big week for films coming out. But I just wanted to mention that the newest Pixar movie hasn't come out in the United States first either. And it's the fact that in Mexico, El Día de los Muertos, which is what the film is about, is a festival that's happening this week.
Yeah.
It's happening tomorrow. But perhaps I wonder whether there's more to it than that within the strategy.
No, that would probably be the case because it's about that particular festival. So it makes sense to release it when that festival is at its peak, when it's going to happen.
Yeah, Texas and California, I would expect.
Yeah.
They'll have to wait, I guess.
But here's the thing. Now, how big is Halloween in Mexico compared to America?
Wow.
In America,
Halloween's huge in America.
Yes, but that's my point. Halloween is huge in America. Yeah. Loads of movies are coming out targeting Halloween, right? Yeah. So you don't want to have a Pixar. No one's going to go watch a Pixar movie for Halloween when you can watch Jigsaw or you can watch, Happy Death
maybe
Day.
Maybe kids.
Yeah, but that's
maybe kids would prefer to watch a Pixar movie rather than torture porn.
But that's the thing. It's sort of the Halloween market isn't really targeting the Halloween TV. Movie market doesn't tend to target kids. Plus, this movie that you're talking about, the Pixar movie, they can release it in America anytime.
Called Coco, sorry.
Coco.
Oh, yeah, Coco,
They can release that in America anytime, and they can get the kids.
It's starting to sound like this whole way of doing it, releasing movies before, in other territories before the United States, it's starting to sound like they do it with movies they know are going to sell really well in America.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Is it fair to say that?
Maybe. It's a strategy.
We need to get a distributor on the show.
We do.
If you are listening to this show and you are a film distributor, we need you. Please email us or tweet us or Facebook us and come and solve our conundrum for us, please.
Speaking of which, this is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM with Marcus E. Acker.
And Laura Sampson.
And our guest tonight is Michael Amaria.
Hi, yeah.
Now, I know I'm conscious of time, so I want to hit our top five film and TV discussion before we move on to Netflix recommendations and then say goodbye to everyone else. Tweet us on Twitter at STB_ResonanceFM or hit us on Facebook, Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. But first, our top five film and TV discussion. Okay, so I was going to go through a whole spiel because I've been doing that the last couple of episodes where I go through the scenario about, and I had this whole thing written out about it's Halloween and a circus has popped up near your neighborhood and you get invited into. I'm doing a spiel. I might as well do it. I'll just do it. It's Halloween and a circus has now popped up in your neighborhood and you go to it with your date and you get welcomed by the ringmaster and her werewolf companion and you go into the House of Mirrors and all of a sudden your date is separated from you and you're trapped in this dark, damp environment with a fog and mirrors and everything all, and your reflections now disappear and instead of your reflections now show the scariest scenes that you remember from your childhood, from movies and television. So all of that is just building up to what our top five film and TV discussion is going to be about today, which is all of us going around and talking about our top five scariest scenes from either television or movies. Michael, as our guest, can you give us your number five and number four, please?
My number five is from Clash of the Titans, and that's the 1981 version, where Medusa turns someone to stone and you see her face in full glory for the first time because her eyes are glowing. I struggle with snakes anyway, so seeing Medusa in that light really, really freaked me out.
Okay.
That's my number five. And my number four, sings as you allowed me to have the Thriller video. It's the end of the Thriller video where I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it. But for me, the chilling.
Who hasn't seen the Thriller video?
Some people, maybe like babies. Yes, the end when Michael Jackson looks into the camera and there's a chilling laugh. I won't tell you what the scene is. If anyone is familiar with the video, they know. For me, that was my earliest scary memory from childhood.
I dig both. I really, especially the laugh, Vincent Price laugh at the end. It's chilling. Yeah. Laura, what's your number five and number four?
My number five is in Dario Argento's Suspiria, the scene of the first murder, which involves an enormous pane of glass and a massive staircase, and it's all very big and bloody and baroque. And my number four is from Jonathan Glazer's Under the Skin. And it's the seaside scene.
That's the Scarlett Johansson one, right?
It's great a Scarlett, movie. Scarlett Weird, Johansson is an alien.
Yeah.
And she is walking by a seaside where a family have gone too far out to sea and they're drowning. And one of them makes it back with a baby and she throws the guy back in the sea and just doesn't even notice that the baby is all alone on the beach and it's just crying and she just walks past.
Yep.
And just the way that they shoot it, everything just, it's just like, ooh, chilling.
I can see how that would stick with you. That's those are two good choices. My number five is X-Files season 1 episode 21, Tombs. Basically, it's about the X-Files show. The monster of the week is this character who can crawl through vents and kill people. And that's basically, it's like, I remember watching it and remember just thinking, you're not safe in your house even if you lock all the doors.
I remember that too. He stretches his limbs, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. And it's chilling. My number four is An American Werewolf in London. And it's not Stuart Ryder, one of the friends of the show, sent a message on there mentioning American Werewolf in London, but he talks about the transformation in the living room. That's not the one for me. I mean, that's memorable, absolutely. Yeah. For me, what still sticks with me since I watched that as a kid is the dream sequence where he's running through the woods and he can see a nurse in the distance. And I won't spoil it, but that's the one that still chills me because every time I'm on a train and we're driving past and the train's going past the woods, I always see that and I always think of that scene and it's really just
American
gets at
Werewolf in London is a great movie. And do you know what it inspired?
What?
The Thriller video.
It's the same director, so you're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. We are having our top five scariest scenes from film and TV. Michael, what's your number three and what is your number two?
Number three comes from Stranger Things season 1.
You
told me off for it. I'm not going to spoil it for anyone. But there's a scene in a different place, a place that's different from what you're... where most of the season set, and something comes out of someone's mouth.
Okay,
that's all I'm allowed to say.
That is all you're allowed to say.
Scared the bejesus out of me. Mm-hmm. So that's my number three. My number two is from a movie called Ju-On, which is the original Japanese version of what was later The Grudge, starring Sharon Michelle Gellar, and it's the staircase scene. Again, I'm not going to spoil anything for anyone, but. Yeah, you'll know what I mean when you see it, and it scared again the bejesus out of me.
Both very very strong ones, especially the Stranger Things one. I'll talk about Stranger Things later on, but very good ones. Laura, what is your number three and number two?
Well, my number three is from the film Event Horizon, and it's the scene where how do I do this without spoiling it? Is there anyone who hasn't seen Event Horizon or who actually still wants to? It's a scene that involves somebody in a trance, a space vacuum chamber, and a locking mechanism. It's just,
you're not giving anything away. It's good. Okay.
A hugely suspenseful near-death experience, which is the beginning of lots of things much worse. And I think I did.
You did very well.
Thank you.
I'm totally confused as to which scene you're talking about. And I've
seen that devil movie. No, I know exactly what she's talking about. Kidding. It's horrible.
I know which scene you're talking about.
Horrible movie.
What is your number two?
My number two is from Wolfgang Peterson's Neverending Story movie, 1984 movie. And
okay. I've never seen the movie, so just your scariest scene.
Shush.
There's a
I'm
moment,
with you, Laura. I'm with you. I'm
there's a moment
you.
In it where two sphinxes' eyes slowly open, about to zap the person who's walking between them, and it's really scary. It's scary for a child, and it was scary for me last Christmas too.
Okay, I apologize for mocking
you
your pain.
Soulless monster. No, ever, ever mock the Neverending Story. It's wonderful.
Well, I haven't seen it, so maybe
you know what? You watch it, and then when something happens to I can't even say, but the horse bit in the swamp, right? See if your eyes are dry.
So it'll get
see
if they are. You think you'll get dust in the room? All right, fair enough. Well, my number three is The Evil Dead. It's the final scene where you think Ash has... Okay, I won't spoil it because it's the end. But it's the final scene in the Evil Dead movie. If you've watched it, you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't watched the Evil Dead, go and watch the Evil Dead. It's very good, very good. My number two, Candyman. I, to this day, cannot say Candyman five times in front of a mirror. I can't even do it now because it is just Tony Todd is amazing in that movie. It is brutal. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus E. Acker.
And I'm Laura Sampson.
Our guest tonight is Michael Amaria. And we're talking our top five favorite scariest scenes in film and TV. Michael, what is your number one?
My number one comes from that devil movie that Laura mentioned not so long ago, Event Horizon.
And it's
the scene where you see the previous crew of the Event Horizon and what happened to them. Again, not going to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but it will make you sick to your stomach.
Alrighty.
Especially if you watch it slowed down, which you can on YouTube.
I'm not doing that ever, ever, ever.
Laura, what's your number one?
My number one is from a CSI season 5 finale. Which was directed by Tarantino, where one of the main detectives, Nick, wakes up in a coffin with a tape recorder by his side telling him how deep he is underground and how he's never going to get out.
That's an amazing episode. Who directed that episode?
It was Quentin Tarantino.
Yes, it was. It was a double-part episode. It was the end of season and the beginning of the new season. My number one is a Nigerian TV show called Hot Cash. Nigerians out there, you probably know this TV show. The character is called Willie. His nickname is Willie. He's a young boy who gets killed by his uncle's wife for the sake of witchcraft and to get money. And his ghost comes back and he kills little children that sing this naughty nursery rhyme. And it's bad CGI, bad special effects, but that adds an extra extra layer of viscera to it, and it's haunted me to today. I'd listen to the theme tune and I still get chills.
Far too many honorable mentions to mention now, aren't there?
We will put them on our Facebook page, which is Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, and we'll also tweet them out on Twitter at STB_Resonance Resonance FM.
Can I quickly say that your number two, Candyman, I've done it loads of times. He never turns up, so don't worry about that.
I'll take your word for it. I won't try it out. So before we wrap up, let's do Netflix and Amazon recommendations. Michael, as our guest, would you like to go first?
I'm going to be stingy and take two. I'm going to say Hands of God is wonderful, both season one and two, and also season two of Stranger Things.
Ooh. Both on Netflix?
Netflix with Stranger Things and Amazon Prime for Hand of God.
You stole my Netflix recommendation. Laura, do you have a recommendation?
I do have a recommendation. It's actually an old film that is newly available this month, this coming month on Amazon Prime, and that's Beetlejuice.
Oh, nice.
Classic.
Well, I guess now what we do is wrap up. Michael, I'd like to thank you very much for coming and joining us tonight.
Thanks for asking.
And thank you all for listening in. This was Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Marcus E. Acko.
I'm Laura Sampson.
Thanks for listening.
See you next week.